Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 555, Jennifer Frizzell's Vocabulary Pyramid. We've got jokes for your classroom. We're going to talk about Jennifer Frizzell's Vocabulary Pyramid, as well as some other things for your classroom. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right. Welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm well. We were off for a couple of weeks in part because I wasn't well.
Yeah, so, it's been an interesting time outside of podcast, hasn't it?
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I think it was food poisoning, but man, I was just out. So yeah, it was just Saturday there where I basically just slept. You know, as is common with the world today, you know, I took several COVID tests and all came back negative. But but yeah, it's been it was not good. So, but I'm back now and ready to rock and roll. I know that I had said a couple weeks ago we're going to be back on a regular basis, but hey, sometimes life happens, and so I was in no shape to do a show at all. So, you know, but we're back, and the school year's kind of kicked off, so we've got a little bit coming up about that, about starting the school year and how to start the school year and all of that good stuff. So yeah. Hey, what's the most common type of doctors in Egypt?
The most common type of doctor in Egypt? Doctor or doctors in Egypt?
Doctors.
Is it important, the plural? Doctors? Mm-hmm. I don't know. No, what is the most common type of doctors? This is the part that's throwing me. Is doctors in Egypt? I don't know.
Chiropractors.
Oh, sure.
Sure. We have a visual joke for you this week that I absolutely love, and I would share it with the kids. It is a spot the difference. You've done the spot the difference
panel. Oh, the Kagan right? ones are great. This is, yeah. But this is better.
This one is.
It's faster, too.
This one is. I think it's very middle school. So head over to middleschoolmatters.com. And check out the visual joke there. Share it with the kids. It's a fun one. Have you been following James Webb Telescope?
No, it moves faster than I can.
It moves fast. It does. But they've done some incredible pictures on the James Webb. And, you know, the operating system is Linux.
I did not know that.
Yeah, all of the things that go out in space are Linux. You know why it's Linux?
Why is it Linux?
You can't open Windows in space.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You know, there was a lovely young couple that decided to get married at a library, but they could not. Do you know why?
They didn't want people to read about it.
No.
I don't know.
The library was all booked up.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's two words that will open a lot of doors for people.
Really? What are those two words?
Push and pull.
Oh. You had to force that joke, right?
Yeah. I was going to cook some alligator for dinner the other night.
Sure.
But then I realized I only had a crock pot.
Oh, boy. You know, timing's everything.
This one's a very topical one. Did you hear about the guy who farted in his wallet?
Farted in his wallet?
Yeah.
No.
Now he has gas money. What happens if someone slaps you at a high frequency?
I don't know. What happens when someone slaps you at a high frequency?
At a high frequency, it hurts. H-E-R-T-Z. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Rented that joke, didn't you, from a car company?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Here's a thought. All snakes are snakes on a plane to flat earthers.
Oh, that's true. I did not think about that, but you're right. Yeah.
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 I got a new printer.
You did?
I did. I had to buy a new printer. First one, the previous printer that I had was the one that we bought for my, well, we didn't actually buy it. It came with the computer that we got for my daughter when she went to undergrad school.
Wow.
So it was not a new printer. So I tried somewhat to fix it, and I kind of quickly gave up. So I bought a new printer, and I'm wondering why there was music coming from it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently the paper was jamming.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, that would do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When is it okay to drink pop in class?
Well, I drink it all the time. I don't even care if it's okay or not. As a matter of fact, there's a story behind that, too, that's not related to the joke. But go ahead with the joke, and I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
You get a kick out of it.
When you're plotting points on a coordinate grid,
because
you can go seven over and seven up.
So, really quick story. We're doing the orientation, right? And we're done with the seventh grade orientation, and the kids are headed out the door. And there's a group of three girls headed out the side door. And I'm standing at my door, which is a bank of lockers away, a classroom length away. And I hear one of them say, "Isn't that the guy with the Diet Mountain Dew?" Like, all the time, Diet Mountain Dew. And I went, "Yep, that's me." And she goes, "Oh, he heard me." But yeah, apparently I have a reputation for my pop. Yes. So I do. I drink all the time. Too much. I drink too much.
I drink too much. Yeah.
He's a Diet Mountain Dew guy.
Too much Diet Mountain Dew. Let's be a little more specific there. So, let's see here. Speaking of being specific.
Yeah.
The wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski took a vacation, hopefully.
Yeah, here he's in the lab. Cooking up new middle school minutes.
Probably back in doing that, but I hear he went on a wonderful vacation, so maybe we'll hear a little bit about that. I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this, but he is going to the one state that I have not been to.
Oh, wow.
I've been to 49 out of the 50 states.
State of shock, state of...
Yeah, state of confusion. No. Confusion, we spend a lot of time there. But he did make sure that we had a middle school science minute queued up and ready to go. And this one is wonderful. This is teaching on societal issues. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the middle school Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the July-August 2022 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the Editor's Corner written by the editor of The Science Teacher, Ann Haley McKenzie. And she wrote an article entitled Teaching Societal Issues in the Science Classroom. And she asked the question, why is it imperative to include societal issues in our science classrooms regardless of the discipline? And she said that by ignoring societal issues, we make it difficult for students to see how science relates to their current and future lives. After all, isn't one of the key purposes of schooling to help prepare our students to be well-informed citizens capable of enhancing the democracy of our country? if they are not well-versed in topics such as climate change, alternative sources of fuel, and genetic engineering, for example, how will they become leaders within their communities? We live at a time when non-educators often decide what should be included in the curriculum, sometimes at a huge cost to scientific literacy. These decisions can pose a danger to our society, especially if they preclude young adults from learning how societal issues impact them at the personal, community, state, federal, and international levels. Exploring societal issues in science affords our students the opportunity to generate enduring questions, experience positive confusion, engage in reflective thought, and develop an understanding of differences in values, priorities, and definitions of morality among people all over the world. She then went on to share a few possible societal topics that could be included in science classes. For instance, how does the destruction of the rainforest lead to future pandemics through the release of viruses and bacteria into plant and animal vectors? How will we keep these diseases under control? Another possible topic, do we have an obligation to assist developing countries in obtaining clean water? And if so, how do we do so in a culturally appropriate manner? Another possible topic, should chemical warfare continue to be developed? What guidelines should be in place in terms of ethical concerns? How are nations handling the development of these weapons? Another idea of a topic, should a nuclear power plant be built in an area close to a population center? What are the ramifications of such a decision? Another, how does the chemical nature of pesticides impact the health and well-being of all life, or does it? And another one, what ethical considerations are present within companies like 23andMe, where our DNA is owned by these companies? She then went on to say that we should take a stand toward infusing these issues into our teaching. They foster the development of students' problem-solving skills, nurture their creativity, and enhance their ability to be innovative. And aren't these reasons enough to include teaching societal issues in the science classroom? And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Well, the school year started off. And this is still kind of weird for me because in Michigan, there was a law passed that we couldn't start with students before Labor Day.
Right.
Right.
It's still there.
That was the big law.
Yep.
Big push, yep. You know, due to tourism and the economy and blah, blah. We're not starting school until Labor Day unless you get an exemption.
Right. You ask the state for a waiver.
And then, and it seemed like there was a few school districts that said, oh, we need to start before Labor Day. And then it seemed like there's a few more that were like, hey, we want to start before Labor Day too. Yep. And now it seems like, you know, just about everybody starts before Labor Day. And in Maine, there is not that culture of starting after Labor Day. So we start before Labor Day, and that's, you know, the way to go. So we have started, and you have started, and I think that we also have a Eileen Award. So
yes,
let's get the Eileen Award taken care of right here as well. And the Eileen Award is an award that comes with a hug.
That's right.
From Eileen, whom we've never met, who we could bump into on the street and not know.
It's true.
It's a podcast. Her.
Yep.
But if you can find Eileen and let her know you're an award winner, she will give you a hug.
Not just her saying so. She did agree to this.
She did agree to this.
Yes.
Again, we don't know her. No. We've never met her. But hey, no. It's an award. And This week, the Eileen Award goes to...
It goes to Mike Maffesoli, who had a topic request and said, and talked to us, talked to me in person and said, hey, could you guys talk about this and give us some resources on the show? So Mike gets the Eileen Award this week.
And his topic request is appropriate for the beginning of the school year.
Yes.
Especially probably for sixth graders, but depending on your configuration, it could be... Could be fifth graders or seventh graders, or and some of the kids may need a reminder as well. But his topic request was
lockers. How do we give the kids some tools and resources for lockers so that it's easier for the teacher to help them to have some prior knowledge when they're coming in on that? So,
and that's one of those things that is easy to forget about. That, you know, it becomes, you know, for teachers, it's like, yeah, it's a locker. You do the combination. You open your locker, you put stuff in, and you go on. But for a kid who hasn't used a locker or locker combinations, can be very different. So, so making sure that kids know where their locker is and how it works is very important. So... Yeah, we've got some resources for you coming up later in the show.
Yep.
But just remember at the beginning of the year that it's kind of important to front load some of that information. Right? So.
Oh. Yeah. No, and with the pandemic, I mean, our seventh graders who were sixth graders last year who did use, but they just don't have that mechanical muscle memory yet. You think they would, I know, but, you know, we still had a lot of seventh graders who came along and said, yeah, the locker thing. Well, we didn't really use lockers last year either. We let the kids carry their bags from room to room. Mm-hmm. And so we had very few kids who actually used lockers. I will say this, it solved a huge number of discipline problems because they weren't crowded together fighting, you know, over space. And then we cut down on the tardies because they weren't running to their locker each hour. And so as a result, I mean, we had a lot fewer tardies. We had a lot fewer fights. Life was a lot easier for the assistant principal for sure. But it's a lot easier for the kids because they didn't have to worry about, you know, the whole fighting thing and the stress over it. So we're going to do something similar. We gave them lockers because some parents said, my kid needs a locker. And we're like, for what? And they couldn't answer that, but they still wanted their kid to have a locker. So every kid has a locker, but we are encouraging them. Yeah, don't use it. Just bring your bag. Just bring your stuff. Don't worry about it. You know, lockers are for lunches in the morning. Get them at lunch. And then, you know, use it at the end of the day. But you don't need it in between. So we're going to start that habit and that culture and see if that works. I was going to say the kids wear boots, right? But, yeah, I haven't seen a kid wear boots now in 20 years because people shove their sidewalks and you know, I will say this. I am happy that I have not seen the whole wearing shorts, cargo shorts to school in the middle of January or the beginning of January and through the dead of winter. That has not made a comeback. You know, grunge has kind of made a comeback, but that has not made a comeback. So I'm happy to see that.
I have seen that. And I've seen that from some of the adults as well. So, you know, and
well, please.
There definitely is a boot wearing in my world.
Oh, the boot thing, yes. Like the cargo shorts, though, in the middle of winter. You've seen that?
I have. And again, from adults as well as.
Yeah.
And I've seen that everywhere that I've been. There always seems to be, that guy, and it's. I hate to say this, but it's usually a guy. It's that guy that always wears shorts. So, yeah.
Not saying the girls seem to be smarter about that.
Not saying they don't do it. I just haven't seen it.
Right. So yeah, that's true too.
You know. So front loading, it's really important. I think sharing dates is really important. Those key dates. And I think one of the things that helps kids do is it helps build the executive function of knowing when dates are and reviewing those regularly, because if you don't teach kids to really plan ahead, that they don't like naturally suddenly develop this, or not all of them do. But that's right. Good to go over every once in a while is key dates and what's happening and when and where and all that good stuff. So does your school use a planner kind of thing?
Yeah, that's the very thing I was going to talk about next is last year we did not use a planner, partially because the planner company screwed up and never sent us the planners.
It was COVID. It would make it hard to use.
Yeah. So we just decided to bail on the whole idea last year. And I think that was, looking back on it, hindsight being 2020, I think that was a mistake because this year we are using planners, but we didn't do specific planners. We did a kind of a generic planner. So the kids actually have to write the dates in every week. So it looks like that's my Monday advisory activity. But the kids have to write in the dates and then they have to be more conscious about it. And one of the things that I start my class with, and this started as a joke with the kids. I start, open your planners to today, write down the following things I say. And then over time it turned into this little rhyme with the kids helped make. And so that's why I keep using it. So I would start every class with open your planners to today, write down the following things I say quickly, neatly, right away. We have lots to do today because kids crave that routine, right? And they want to hear that. And that was my signal the class begun. I couldn't do that last year. And it really threw me off and it threw the kids didn't know it, but it threw them off as well because it wasn't that, establishing that signal and that routine and that custom was more difficult. More probably so on me than them because I've been doing this for 20 plus years saying that little ditty. But I'm going to get back in the habit because they have those planners. Now, we made the assumption that the kids would use Google Calendar. Oh, dear, were we naive. And they didn't. Right, because required a modicum of effort on their part. And so we would like force things into the calendar and create events for them, right? And they were like, oh, cool, thank you, and never look at them. They wouldn't open the app. So we're going to do the whole paper planner thing because it's an executive skill that they need that they haven't developed yet, but we can train other parts of the brain to do it, right? And I think it's so key. I think you're so right when you said that the developing that executive function in kids is going to be critical. That, and I love the fact that I can say, all right, open your planner. And this is at conferences. Now tell me where you wrote this stuff down that I said to do in class. And it's blank. Parents look at the kid and they look at me and they look at the kid and they're like, okay, I see where the problem is here. we're going to have a talk when we get home, but it's a great way to say, look, so one of the issues we're having is you're not doing other stuff because you haven't organized here and you aren't looking at it using the tool to help you be successful. So, right. Yeah. So plan. Yeah. We are definitely doing planners and I am nailing those hard this year and I'm going to, yeah.
And I was wondering if you were, what the difference between electronic planner, i.e. Google Cal and physical planner and whether you'd use those and whether you have some kids that use them or not use them or those kinds of things as well.
So I noticed, and I think you'll find this part interesting because you laugh at me and some others who use our email as kind of like a Rolodex or a filing system.
I do kind of understand it, but it's like, that's not what email is supposed to be for.
I know. Yep. I know. And you're right. It's not supposed to be for that. However, and this is where I think the kids take a look at calendars. They keep their list of things to do in their messages. Kids will say, well, I want you to do this or I want you to do that, right? So they can just scroll back and look through a streaming or continuous list. The problem with that is that, as stuff flies by, they fail to go back to say, oh, I was supposed to be here at such and such a date or time. Where this is where a calendar would fix that. But they
that's
don't
not the
have
only
made that
problem
mental.
With that, but that is a problem with that.
Oh, yeah. No, I shouldn't say this. That's not, I misspoke. That's not the entire. But there's one of many of the problems with that. There we go. Is, and so stuff flies by and they never go back and pick it up. And this is where the planner, the calendar would fix some of those things. But I think that's what they're doing is they're just using that and then living their life as a stream rather than as a plan.
Mm-hmm. And again, especially for middle school kids, that's when developing those executive functions of how to do things, when to do them, where to do them, how to keep track of things is one of the real life skills that if they can learn it there, will make high school and beyond high school that much easier. So, and there's, you know, just a lot of kids struggle with that. So not unusual for middle school kids to struggle with that. So, yeah. Okay.
Nice.
And then also making sure that they know, like, where to go, like where the cafeteria is, where the gym is, where all of the, where the office is.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Got a kids are going to find out right away there. Yep. They're just begging for it.
Special invitations.
Would you take this special piece of paper down to the assistant principal for me, please? Right. Why is my name on it? Well, we're going to talk about that later.
Do you remember the previous 15 minutes?
Remember when I said you couldn't do that? Yeah. That's the other thing, so, too. And that's not on our list here, but we showed a video a couple shows ago. I guess it was the last show. It's been a couple weeks. Where there was a presenter who was saying, you know, do something amazing with your subject in class to get them hooked on your topic, and then go into the rules, and then go into the housekeeping details. And I kind of sort of tried that this year. We do a Cardinal 101 thing. It comes from the high school. The high school assistant principal became our principal. He brought it down. We kind of morphed it into something else that isn't as nice as what I think the high school does, but that's, again, just my opinion. And so my kids are going to get the rules like next week. We also had a huge storm come through here. And so the kids went to school for the first day of school, mm-hmm. and then didn't for 2 days, and then did on day, well, it was supposed to be day four, was actually day two. And in my kids, they had a sub because I had some other stuff going on. And so we haven't hit the things like, what are the expectations for the classroom? And what are my expectations for completion of work and getting mm-hmm. things set up and getting kids into a Google Classroom turned out to be the, a fascinating little challenge, for them. So that made it difficult to kind of do things like that. You know, so there's that whole aspect inside of things as well. I'll admit I started going somewhere and I've kind of wandered off and found something sparkly, I guess. But, you know, there's all of those things to do as well. This is a packed.
Yeah. And that I find interesting that you say kids having trouble getting to Google Classroom, because it would seem to me that that would be something they would be rather familiar with by this point.
There was a, I'm trying to think of the name of the app. It's a ClassLink. There we go. All mm-hmm. right. So ClassLink does a lot of the work for kids, right? So they click on the icon, and once they've logged into the computer, it automatically logs them into whatever app that is in the right. ClassLink thing that's been linked. And I will admit, for getting into things the first time, it's super helpful and handy. However, I think at the same time, the kid never has to remember anything and just can click the one thing. And when they have to use it, when they are on a computer that isn't ClassLink enabled, then it's paralysis. They're paralyzed with it. But that was just challenging. I think I give the kids more tech credit than I should. And so I have to keep retelling myself. And I know a big part of one of the things I'm going to do this week. So I use Moodle. For those of you who might be new to the show, I use Moodle. Troy uses some Moodle for things, but on a much mm-hmm. higher level than I do.
I wouldn't say higher level. I'd just say a little different. But
I think it's adults are smarter than my seventh graders. Just I'm going to go out there.
Yeah. Okay.
I tend to saw those things off behind me. and so I know that's going to be, now for some, they used it with one of the sixth grade teachers, and they're familiar with it. They know what to do. They're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be my helpers. They're going to help my new kids who are like, what's a Moodle? Or if they were listening to the kids last year, no, not Moodle. We got our, I'm really rabbit holing here. I'm sorry about this.
Good.
We got our scores back printed in the Detroit News of all things. One of the things we need to work on is reading. And one of the ways you get better at reading is by reading, doing it. And so that's one of the big things that they're going to be doing in Moodle this year, is doing a lot of reading and then telling me about what they read. But getting logged in and getting used to those things. You would think, like, for example, in the pre-show, my nephew messaged and said something about not being able to log into Roblox, right? And are getting hooked into the server so he can play games with his friends. They know how to do it in that context, but take it out of that mm-hmm. context, it seems to be a difficult transition for them to make. So I know there's going to be a lot of handholding when it comes to things like just simple logging into things. And then, the expectations of what to do when you're in there.
Yeah, that's one of those persistent issues that has come up, is a lot of times adults default to, well, the kids know how, the kids are very tech savvy. The kids know how to do this. The kids know how to do this. It's like, the kids know how to do the things that are of interest to them. Right. They know how to,
yes,
you know, they know how to play Roblox, but doesn't mean that they know how to do research. It doesn't mean that they know how to evaluate stuff online. Doesn't mean they know how to sign into everything. So we've got to teach them some of those things as well. And that's important to remember. Kids are usually willing to learn how to do stuff. So if there's interest level, they'll figure it out. But
yeah,
we can't presume that they already know a whole bunch of stuff. So, oh yeah. All right. In the pre-show, you also talked about something that I'm going to call on you to share kind of quickly. And that was Jennifer Frizzell's vocabulary pyramid.
Yes.
Yes. What is Jennifer Frizzell's vocabulary pyramid?
Correct. You said that twice. Like, well, what is it? Well, all right. I'll let me backstory first. Okay. Well, first of all, it's Jennifer Frizzell's vocabulary pyramid. That's exactly what it is. There you go. That's what
there
it
you
is.
Go.
Yeah. I mean, you know Jennifer. Why are you asking me?
No, I do.
I had an implant in my eyeball put in this August 8th, and I had cataract surgery. And so they went in. So the cool thing, I mean, for all the nerdy people out there, you know, they put the blue film on like your glasses to like help with like computers. They put the blue film on my new lens in my eyeball. So I've got the blue film already in there to protect me from computer screen and stuff. So anyway, it's not just that, it's other things too. But so for the second, so we had a power outage. We had a big storm come through here. 260 some thousand people without power. My school had power until 12 hours after the storm, and then we didn't have power. I don't know how to explain it, but we made it through the storm. I made it through the storm, had power, and I thought, yes, I survived this one. And then 12:30, the day after the storm, my power went out. No explanation. So we were out of school for 2 days. So where I was going to plan things out so that day four would be when I had the sub and I had to go back in and see the doctor for my post-op, dilation and look in the eyeball and tell me everything's okay. It ended up being day two. So I had to make lesson plans for day two, right? I've met these kids once. And I couldn't have them go into the computer because there were issues with logging into Google Classroom. Some just couldn't do it. I wasn't going to have them try logging into Moodle and just doing things in Moodle, because normally I would just give them a Moodle assignment and let them work through it themselves. So I went to something that has been tried and true in the past. I completely stole from Jennifer Frizzell, a wonderful thing she presented at a conference. And I definitely saved it. And that was her vocabulary pyramid. It's a series of boxes, three levels. The top level of the pyramid has one box. The second level has two boxes. And the bottom level has three boxes. And in each one of these boxes are different varying activities related to things to do with vocabulary. So the very first one is the one that I really want them to do. It's the one that everybody's going to have to do. And that is take the word, the definition, and put a picture with it. Okay? Very simple. Mm-hmm. Straightforward. The next row has... give me an antonym for each word, or the other box is a synonym for each word. Pick one of the two. Don't have to do both. Pick one for each row. And in the bottom one, I've got three different ones. One was create a video, one was create a TikTok, and the other one was write me a story using all the words. And that's the one that requires more thought than the other two. And just pick one from each row and have at. First of all, following directions for picking one for each row was a challenge. That tells me something. That's good to know right up front,
right
at the beginning of the year, that directions are going to be an issue. The second thing is they looked at create a video and create a TikTok using the words, and that was not a problem. The one that blew them out of the water was the create a story. It's a choice. They don't have to do this one. They could do the other ones. Create a story using the words. And they said, that means we'd have to write. And that's apparently going to be a thing this year.
Yes.
I get it. I understand. They don't know. They're going to have to do quite a bit of that. But so Jennifer Frizzell's vocabulary pyramid came to my rescue. We used to have it on the website. I don't know if it's still there or not. That was in the resources page. I don't know if we still have that resources page. We put it up there like 15 years ago when we started the show. So we put it there. I don't know if it's still there or not.
We have, and we don't have a resources page. We have a professional development page.
Maybe that was it. Either
we
way.
We have presentations.
Maybe that was it. Because she and Steve presented on it at AMLE back when it was NMSA. So those are...
Oh, it is still there. It is. It's from NMSA 08.
There you go. There you go.
Wow.
Pulled that one out of the brain, didn't I? Take that, old age.
All right.
So thank you, Jennifer, for that great resource you shared back in 2008.
Uh-huh.
Don't delete it. Please don't delete it.
Uh-oh. I'm going to have to fix the link, though, because the link goes to, I have to fix the link, because if you click on the link right now, I shouldn't be saying this, because hopefully we'll get it fixed before the show goes live, but it goes to a link right now that says, this is somewhat embarrassing, isn't it?
Whoops.
That's, okay, I did a nice error page at least. So yeah, because I've
food looks good.
Well, yeah, I know. Now I'm getting hungry, so let's
is that falafel? Moving. That's falafel, isn't it?
No, it's not falafel. It's their vegetarian or their lentil balls.
Oh, with tabbouleh and.
But they're is that good. Pita? Yeah. There's a nice cucumber sauce with it as well. It
looks delicious, yeah.
Wow, we gotten into a rat hole. Okay. Anyway,
you know what? I'll take that instead of the vocabulary pyramid today.
We'll have to find. I'll relink the vocabulary pyramid there. So yeah, I wonder why I put it there instead of over somewhere else. Okay. So, all right. So, so you use that with kids, and they picked one, and you learn some things. So that's good. And we will have to relink to the vocabulary pyramid.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We learned some things about our own website.
Yeah. Yep. This is what happens because a little bit behind the scenes. I did that one on another website that I have. And that must have been where I put the resources. I don't know why I put them there instead of on the Middle School Matters page. So I'll have to, and then I've completely redone that web page probably two or three times since we did that, and to be honest with you. And so, yeah. So we'll have a link for it though. One thing that has been redone two or three times at least since we started this is the Twitterverse as well.
Oh, yes.
We have some things in the Twitterverse.
Yeah. Have we talked about Susie Dent before?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I believe because we have. I could do a quick search.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you get more pictures of lentil balls and cucumber, I might have to leave the show for a few minutes to go grab something to snack on because that was just like, oh. Well, Susie Dent, I think it was a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that, first of all, she's a word person, a wordsmith. Not Smith, she's a word historian, I guess is where I should say. And so I actually used the one that we talked about, I think it was the last show, where in the Middle Ages, eggs were referred to as cackle farts, right?
Yes.
I put that I did a newsletter, 3-2-1 countdown, getting kids excited to be back in school. I mentioned that in this as kind of a thing, like who's really reading this type of thing. And none of the kids should have found that or like cackle farts, har, har, har. And nobody mentioned it. I don't know if they're just afraid to yet or what, but Susie Dent is back. Susie Dent is back in the Twitterverse here with word of the day's reminder. There is a reminder of ipsedixitism. It's an 18th century word, which means the assertion that something is a fact based on one person's opinion. And that is like so seventh grade, so middle school. I thought, oh, you got to drop that on the kids this week. At least drop in the faculty lounge and see who goes, oh, I know what that is. Typical edu celebrity at edu celebrity. You're not a real teacher until you've played two truths and a lie with people you've known for years. And that's in the context of, you know, when you're in teacher PD that first week and the presenter comes in and wants to play a game and you're playing the same games you played with other people for 20 plus years and you know them pretty well. And it's like two truths and a lie. Yep. Okay. MiddleWeb posted an interesting post. Also see at Question to Think's article, excuse me. Students learn from inquiry, not interrogation, not by questioning. And there's a link there because that's, yeah, that can happen.
Today. Not interrogation.
No, interrogation. Yeah. It's an interrogatory style. So I had a principal who was big on this whole teachers asking questions and students answering, interrogatory teaching. And I'm going to use the cough button here.
Okay. And while you do that, I will, so while you're coughing, I'm going to say, I had the opportunity to do a game, you know, a PD game. So I did Wordle paper plate spelling. So essentially what I did, or what my group did, is we took paper plate spelling. So we created teams, and we gave them 12 letters. I didn't do the whole alphabet. We just did 12. And then we did password paper plate Wordle. So one person knew the word and had to get the other two people on their team to spell the word by password rules. So you couldn't use the word, you know, you had to give them hints as to what the word was. And then they had to spell it using the paper plates. And they were 5 letters long. So it was password paper plate Wordle.
I love it. I like that idea.
I had a good time with it. So, and of course, I did most of it electronically. It's copied, you know, 5-letter words and randomly selected a whole bunch of them. So originally I had them have different words. I had them all have the same words, but in different orders so that they couldn't watch the group next to them. It's on a spreadsheet.
Mm.
So it's on a spreadsheet.
Okay. That makes sense. Know.
And they got like 2 points if they got it right, and they lost a point if they skipped a word, and then they had a little tick box for whether they got it right or they skipped it, and then the math was done automatically because I did it on a spreadsheet.
Oh, cool!
So, yeah, that was my PD thing. So.
I love the one where they're all doing the same words, but in paper plate spelling, it's quieter than the usual activity because if they're very very loud, they're giving away the answer to the teams. So, mm-hmm. But I like your spin on it. So it's self paced and everything, and not waiting around. I like that. Where was it? Oh, middle web. Also, I like middle webs. Yes. I'll get us back on track. So I had a principal who was big on this, really, really big on making sure teachers ask questions. So this is an interesting article because it says that students learn from finding things out and using inquiry, not necessarily the question method. It's quoting TCEA, which could be Texas.
It is.
Computer Educational Association. Mm-hmm. It could be the Tennessee. It could be the Tippecanoe. Mm-hmm. It could be, I have a lot of fun with the T word. Mm-hmm. All the different possibilities, but yes, it is Texas. How does scaffolds and Tyler too? That's right. There's another T. How to scaffold skills for student discussions? There's a link here, and they put the graphic in the show notes. So, social skills are speaking, listening, collaborating. Cognitive skills are connection making, questioning, creating. Questioning is not the only thing in that list. And then the use of knowledge skills are text based, prior academic knowledge, and experiential knowledge, which are things that we talked about earlier in the show. How being it's important for learning to put those things in there. So, something to check out and take a look at. Something else to take a look at is Kelly Gallagher and his post, Kelly G2Go is his handle. As you begin a new school year, you might ask your students this question I learned from @ErnestMorrell. What does it mean to get better at reading? And maybe chart their responses. We got our state standardized test scores back this past week, and they're not great, but ours have never been great. And they shouldn't be great because our kids are 61% Yemeni refugees, right? Now, nobody will ever make that connection when it comes to like the newspaper and the media and all that kind of thing. They're just going to report, this is horrible. Well, considering that they walked off the airplane not too long ago and didn't have any English, yeah, we're pretty happy. But I love this question because it's going to help, and it might use this in advisory, but I might just do this with all of it. I might say, look, mm-hmm. this is what your scores that were reported in the newspaper, you know, what does it mean to get better? How do we do that? How do you do that? And make them cognitively think about that. Paul Allison, on Teachers Teaching Teachers Tonight. We'd love to hear how things are going for you, by the way. You'll have to like go and look at the past because this happened in the past, but I'm sure that they've got, you can always go and find the stuff, the hashtag it and that sort of thing. If you're already returned, or what are you planning for the fall? We'll also include some thoughts on the habits of mind. Hope you make it at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 PM and there's a link there for you. It is a Kumo space link, but go take a look at it. There's some things there for helping at the beginning of the year, maybe next year. Ditch That Textbook has a link to some icebreakers for those first few days of school. Canva has some fantastic customizable, ready-to-use activities for you. I have not used Canva. I've heard people talk about it and that they do like it, I guess.
Experience with it? One of my tech integrators did a presentation with Canva, And for teachers to how to use Canva in the classroom, because you can really create some very nice visual graphics. And even more importantly, you can have kids create visual graphics.
Oh, that's even better.
It's easy to use. You can do quite a bit with it. It's really nice.
We were talking about planners earlier, and Toby Emotz, Holly, at Toby_Emotz, posted Ben Franklin's daily routine is the quote-unquote hack everybody's looking for. And it's actually his, it's a page. He was a printer, so he printed a page. And it's his planner, essentially. And he's got a question for himself in the morning is, what am I going to get done today? I'm paraphrasing. And then at the very end, in the left column, it's like a Cornell note style setup, if I could loosely compare it. And at the, but at the very bottom of the day, it says, all right, what did I get done? What did I actually get done? But on the right-hand side, it's got the hours. And then it lists, it breaks into the sections saying, all right, this is where I'm going to do my work. This is where I'm going to plan to do my work. This is where I'm going to have lunch. I'm going to read. I'm going to catch up on my accounts and other things at lunchtime. Go back to work. And then in the bottom half of the day, dinner, think about, reflect, and then go back to work. Right. And then and then I think it's interesting because at 1 o'clock it says, oh, I'll go to sleep at 1 a.m. Franklin, according to this, only got about 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. So that's
so wait a minute, because he goes to bed at 10 o'clock, according to this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sleep is listed, has the little squirrely brackets.
Oh, I got it. There you go. There's just, I missed the bracket. See, you know, the implant is still, I'm not blaming the implant.
So
anyway, all right. Yes. Well, then, yes, he gets way more sleep than I do. Hurry up. I'll finish the last two here. John Johnston at John Johnston. Examples and more of using H5P that might be useful for hashtag Globlog users interested in creating interactive resources. There's a presentation there, a branching presentation in particular, using H5P. You might find it interesting. The resources might be helpful. Save Your Sons posted an interesting quote this week. Tradition is a set of solutions for which we have forgotten the problems. Throw away the solution and you get the problems back. And I thought that was an interesting thing to share with kids that are looking to, you know, why do we need to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, answering the question for, you know, some things are tradition. And we do that because it solves problems.
That's right.
Something that would help solve problems is hashtag MS Chat every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as Troy says, the Twitter never stops.
It does not. And we've got a neat little strategy here for you.
Yeah.
And that is level 8 of Jumanji.
Yes. You know Dr. Debbie Silver. Matter of fact, she has been on this show.
She has.
Yes. We
it's
love
been Dr. a while.
2008, I think. I'm just kidding. Or maybe, actually. yeah. So she posted an article in AMLE and, it's about, you know, the beginning of the year is not level 8 of Jumanji. And there's some different techniques and strategies you can use to survive this year. And she loves she quotes herself by saying, telling teachers, please don't give up. You have what it takes to make this work. Yes, it's different now, but middle school always has been about navigating and shifting terrain. And that's what you're doing now. Don't fret. You got this. So one of the ways, strategies she mentions is to stop fretting. It's you're expending way more energy and effort than you have to when you're doing that. And also don't have those in an awful conversations, right? Talk about the legitimate problems we're facing and then focus on solving those, not on the unfixable ones. Taking back, teachers need to take back their power. We need to see ourselves as visionaries, not as victims. I think that's a great point. And by the way, I'm summarizing the article, but please, please, please go read it. She's a wonderful writer and she does it far better than I can give it justice. Build relationships like never before. It's those people, other people in your building that help you lean on, that you're going to need to lean on, and they're going to need to lean on you in order to help them get through the school year. We had a teacher who left. Thursday was her last day. She's going to her dream position which opened up. Otherwise, she'd have been with us. And she's a wonderful teacher. And she's going to this new position in a different district. And she's going to do a wonderful job there. But mm-hmm. one of the things that she kept saying over and over again is the hardest part of leaving was the relationships of the team and being able to rely on each other and support each other and build things together. That was the thing that she was going to miss the most. She's going someplace where they're a junior high model, not a middle school model.
Yeah.
And so there's some great advice in here. I have not come anywhere near close to hitting it all. And of course, she's a great storyteller as well. And she's got some good mm-hmm. stuff in here. So the link is in the show notes. Mm-hmm. You can also find her at debbiesilver.com. And if you want to go to the secret trove of wonderful things, if you listen to some of her presentations, she gives you the secret code to get in to her wonderful tools. So look her up online, watch her presentations, find her at a conference, listen to her session. She's got some great stuff.
Absolutely. And then we also have a couple of links to how to open a combination lock as per a topic request. So there's a couple of links there that you can use with kids. There's a document, a PDF, and there's also a YouTube video. So yep. take advantage of those. And then once kids are in their lockers and all of that good stuff, and it's time to do some learning. Space practice is something that I've talked about kind of frequently over the years. And there is a site called Save All. It's saveall.ai. And what it does is it does spaced learning. Now, you can use Anki, and I've talked about Anki quite a mm-hmm. bit. Anki is open source and wonderful. And this is just another option. Where it does spaced practice, it is free for basic accounts. There is a subscription model. And basically, after you get so many wrong, spaced all will make you wait 15 minutes before you can use it again. And the subscription model takes that 15 minutes away, kind of thing.
Oh,
so you okay. can use it for free. The kids can use it. And basically what it does is you create your flashcards with the things that you want to learn and remember on it. And then if you get it correct, it'll give it to you one day. If you get it correct again, it'll wait 3 days. If you give it correct again, it'll wait 7 days. Get it correct again, it'll wait 14 days. So it's over time. And it kind of brings things back for you as well. So I would say for your pyramid, one of the things that kids could do would be to create an Anki deck with the words on it. Just a little thing.
I like it.
But while you're doing that, you also might want to check out the Culture Translator. And you've got a couple of words this time?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that came up in the Culture Translator this week that, I made me stop and go, oh, I need to know that. The first one is something called Rainbow Road. If you hear it, it's actually a code. The DEA is warning of brightly colored pills and powders that are containing fentanyl. And mm-hmm. are being sold to young customers. The so-called rainbow fentanyl has been seized in 18 states. It's making its way out there into schools. It's made to look like candy, and they're making it's a deliberate effort to drive the addiction. So when I went to have my eye done, it was cool because I got to see the whole thing, right? Because you can't miss it. It's right. It's in your eyeball. And I was looking at the paperwork afterwards, and they twilight you, right? Which I think was a kick because I didn't feel a thing, right? And I didn't even feel the betadine when they put it in. I didn't feel anything. I felt good. And I remember just thinking to myself, oh, this is fascinating. This is interesting. Oh, my word. Look what they're doing. Oh, this is cool. And Dr. Kresh, who did a wonderful job, Dr. Kresh, I remember him patting me on the shoulder and he was talking me through it, saying, all right, we got the lens that we're going to put your new lens in now. Okay. And I don't remember if I said anything or not, but I remember in my head going, yeah, cool. And later on, I looked at the thing. And they had actually given me fentanyl to twilight me, right? And I felt good. I can only imagine if it was a much, much stronger dose, because it doesn't take much to kill you. You know, I can imagine if they were giving me like a billionth of a part per million, super, super small amount, that any more than that, what that would do. I don't want the kids to have that. If I hear it, I want to know about this Rainbow Road thing.
Yeah.
The other one is a hashtag, and it's a Twitter hashtag, and it's a hashtag SHTWT. It stands for Self Harm Twitter. And there's been a 500% increase on Twitter using this hashtag, where people, kids are talking about doing self harm, and it's created a community of people who are self harming. Rutgers has done a report on this, and there's a link to the report in our show notes, that members of online communities are promoting self-harm, and they're finding each other and they're interacting and talking about it on Twitter. So the reports contain some images that are disturbing and graphic, so you need to know that. We did not post anything in the show notes. So teacher discretion advised.
All right. Little bit of nostalgia for you. Remember 8-bit art?
I do. I remember that being an assignment, but it was in black and white because we had gray screen TRS-80 That's computers.
Right. Yeah. Well, there is a site called, not surprisingly, make8bitart.com. So you can have your kids, or you could do it, but, you know, basically I tend to be... I tend to be productively lazy and make the kids do the work. And some of the kids might just have fun with this, just making 8-bit art. And then they can make things that they could use in your classroom for. They could use it for creating comic strips or things like that, right? So, you know, they can make some 8-bit art, just something that's kind of cool. PBS has a whole bunch of U.S. history. They have a U.S. history collection. And you can browse the classroom resources by era. You can browse the classroom resources by skill. So such things as analyzing primary resources, developing an argument, analyzing multiple perspectives, developing civic understanding and engagement, or the eras, pre-colonial America to 1754, the West transformed, 1865 to 1900. You will have, the link I'm doing is to Maine Public PBS, because that's my PBS station. But if you click on the link, it will ask you, is Maine your, at least it asked me, it'll ask, is Maine your PBS station? And you can pick the one that's in your area. But again, there's a lot of really good resources there. So if you're a history teacher, this can be very valuable. But even if you're not a history teacher, there's a lot of good resources you can use here for reading or for developing some of those skills. Reading and writing in history, interpreting cause and effect, interpreting graphs and charts. So you can take advantage of using those as well. Have you used the PBS history collection?
I've used PBIS. PBIS, ha. Huh. Used PBS for some things. I will say that I find PBS useful on the Apple TV.
There you go.
Yeah, and then also, for example, when I do Julius Caesar in Rome, I'll pull down the Julius Caesar Shakespeare Uncovered or something like that. They did a whole series of different Shakespearean plays, and one of them is Brian. Oh, I can't think of his last name. Wonderful actor, British actor. And he goes through and details Julius Caesar and explains how Shakespeare's history plays, in this case, Julius Caesar, is actually pretty spot on with the actual history, which is not always what happens in a lot of plays. And but he goes through and explains a lot of the politics and things that go behind it. So the kids, I showed it to the seventh graders before. And remember, these are ELLs. And when they get done, they're like, oh, I understood that. And I'm like, that was Shakespeare. You understood Shakespeare. You understood that? Yeah, I understood that. They do a wonderful job. They do such a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of doing a wonderful job, Fabio Di Salvo has done a wonderful job with science root words. So this is a bonus Dave Bidlowski. Hey, check this out and let me know what you think of it. He has created cards. It says 40 so far. There's a PDF with the first 26 and then a PDF of the next 14 cards. I think this is a great idea. This comes from when he took a bilingual and multi-learner course. This is one of the useful strategies he picked up. So he created these, and these are really, I think they're neat and useful. Again, colorful, graphic, helps the kids create those. You could use Anki, you could use Save All, and have the kids create them as well, so they could have space practice and learning these, just to bring things together. Also want to make you aware that Capwing Pro is now 100% free for students and educators. And this does some nice things with video projects and collaborating on digital content. So you might want to check that out. Both of us are big on H5P, and I know you've used Lumi quite a bit, but you found kind of an update this time through.
Yeah, Lumi makes an app that's not even a full first gen. But it might as well be. They do an app that puts H5P tools in an app, and you can then work and build them offline, and then upload them to your learning management system, Canvas, Moodle, Blackboard. It works with a whole bunch of different ones. They've taken and put their app as an HTML app on the web. And so if you go to app.lumi.education, you can sign up, create an account, and you can sign up, and you could use their app as a web app in a browser to build your H5P activities for your students. And then you can save them and you can upload them to your LMS and you know, Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, away you go. And there are links in the show notes.
Yeah. Yep. And you could even have kids create them and share them with you as well. So let the kids do the work. Hey, I got a couple more things here for you, and we'll do these kind of quickly as we recognize the time. We had a lot to make up for being off a couple weeks. But this is one where a middle schooler did some genealogy.
Okay.
And she discovered the family ties among some of American history's most achieved politicians, i.e. presidents. She has uncovered evidence that each American president, except one, has a common, very famous ancestor.
Really?
So I thought this was neat, because it's something that a middle school kid found and has shared. And I like to point out when middle school kids do great things, because there's a lot of middle school kids that do great things. And here it is, you know, check this out. And then this is another one of those that I would probably share in an advisory kind of class. And this one, you can find several different possibilities on this, because this is someone who's very famous at this point. There's been a lot of things written on Jadavae Payang. I'm sure I have not done that well. So, but what's neat is he has essentially created a forest. And he's done it by basically planting a tree every day. And they talk about the effect that he's had, the impact that he's had. He's done a great thing by doing a little thing day after day after day after day after day. And I think it's great for kids to hear about how you can make a difference, but sometimes it's not that you're going to see the difference immediately. Sometimes it's done over time, and those investments that you make now really make a big difference. So you can, I've linked to an NPR article about him, but if you look up his name, you will find a lot of resources as well, and you might want to share some of those with the kids. You may find some that you like, or have the kids look at different things and compare and contrast the research that they do with it as well. We would love it if you'd head over to middleschoolmatters.com. We've got a couple of visual jokes there. We've got some, we've even got an extra little random thought for you that you can check out over there. There's links for where you can find the show. We'd love it if you'd share the show on the social medias as well. And again, there's a link to head over to iTunes. We would really appreciate it if the podcatcher of your choice, you know, allows you to give us a 5-star rating. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest kosher host. Ooh. Reach out to us, and if you have a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, reach out on one of the links there. Send us an email or otherwise reach out. We look forward to hearing from you. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest, and not indicative of any employer.